DW Africa Link.
El Niño. That is not the name of a Brazilian footballer. Nope. El Niño is a weather phenomenon caused by warmer than usual ocean water. Based on your location in the world, it can either cause heavy rainfall and flooding or lead to droughts. And it's hitting Southern Africa hard. An El Niño-induced drought is affecting tens of millions of people, causing significant food shortages across the region. So how bad is the situation on the ground, and what is the Southern African Development Community, SADC, doing about it? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
The Southern African region is suffering from an extreme drought caused by El Niño weather phenomenon. Reports indicate that its impact has left an estimated 56 million people struggling to find food. February 2024 was Southern Africa's driest February in a century, where only 20% of the usual rainfall was received, and temperatures soared above average. Countries like Zimbabwe, Malawi, and Zambia are particularly affected, with widespread malnutrition reported. Let me introduce you to my colleague, Miriam Kaliza, DW correspondent in Malawi. Hello, Miriam.
Hello, AD. I'm glad to be here.
I am glad you are here. Joel Deg is also here with us. He's a climate expert in West Africa. Hello, Joel. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, Eddie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you on. Joel, let me start with you. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres attributes the worsening conditions to climate change. So how is the current El Niño phenomenon different from past weather events?
Thank you very much, Eddie. As said by the UN Secretary General, indeed, the effects that we are experiencing these days along the coast of Ghana is more than we ever experienced. So the fingers are pointing towards worsening climate effects along the coast here, with warm condition, surface of the ocean getting warm, and level rising, and the effect is what? The coastal erosion we are experiencing these days. He's right. Saying that the worsening conditions we now experience in most parts of the world are attributable to the impact of climate change, especially in Ghana and where I am, east of Ghana, along the coast, towards the border with Togo Republic.
Right. So you're talking to us from Ghana, you're from Ghana, and you are saying that this El Niño phenomenon, which is causing some level of drought, it's not just mainly happening in Southern Africa, but it's also happening in Ghana where you are. Parts of Ghana is facing drought currently, is what you're saying, some heat and drought?
Exactly so. As mentioned by the Minister of Food and Agriculture of Ghana, about 8 of our 16 regions are experiencing some dry spell for some time now. By those 8 regions, we mean the regions north of the country, like Upper East, Upper West, the Savannah regions, the Northern regions, and part of the Bono, and part of the Bronx, Hafo regions. Yeah, so all these places have witnessed long or prolonged drought moments, which is even leading to food shortages because the small harvest, agricultural harvest has been impacted. So there's likelihood that the harvest this year is not going to be as much as expected. So there is already the need to, look at food security issues concerning the northern part and the entire country as a whole.
Right, right. I mean, Miriam, to bring you in, it's clearly not just the East Southern Africa problem or even just the Ghana problem. It's a global problem. You are our correspondent in Malawi. Give us a sense of how the climate change-induced drought is affecting people's lives in Malawi.
Thank you very much, AD, for giving me the platform. I'll go straight to El Nino. It has indeed significantly impacted Malawi and the whole region, Southern Africa, in many fronts. Mainly, the agriculture sector has been impacted. There were crop failures. It also led to dry spells and erratic rainfall in Malawi, affecting the sector. Given that, particularly in Malawi, people depend on rain-fed farming, and it is a major source of livelihood for the majority of Malawians, the disruptions have had devastating consequences. Our staple food in Malawi is maize, and it's a primary food source, has experienced significant yield reductions during the El Nino event. So this means there's been a widespread food insecurity, and Malawi is facing one of its worst food crises. As the Department of Disaster Management is saying, over 7 million people are requiring food assistance. It's not looking good. And also in terms of livelihoods and the economy, the downturn has also had a ripple effect on the broader economy, loss of crops, reduced productivity, and food shortages has led to increased prices of basic commodities, straining household incomes even further. So it doesn't look good.
It doesn't sound good. Which people are the most affected?
So everyone. I was talking to an official from the Department of Disaster. They said all the 27 councils in Malawi are experiencing food insecurity, but there are some councils, a handful, that have been badly hit and that they require food assistance immediately while they are still sourcing or mobilizing resources elsewhere.
And are all parts of the country affected the same? I'm assuming some parts are probably hit.
Others were badly hit in levels, but overall, in a nutshell, a very huge number of the rural dwellers are experiencing the food insecurity the most.
Right. It's hitting people in the rural areas the most, you say. Joelle, you know, we've been talking about climate change for a very long time now. And we clearly see that food security in the region is one of the most prominent things that happen in such a situation when climate change induced drought. In this case, we're focusing on El Nino, that it really can hit people. So tell me, Joelle, what are the short-term and long-term implications of this drought on food security in the region?
According to World Food Program, about 1.05 million Ghanaians are going to be affected by food insecurity between the months of June to August, September. And already, the Ministry of Agriculture has laid ban on the export of necessary grains like our staple food, that is maize or corn, and sorghum and millet and others, and has already issued a directive that the security forces should mount surveillance along the borders of Ghana, between Ghana and Togo, Benin and Burkina Faso, so that the smuggling of necessary staple commodities will not be smuggled out of the country. And in addition, the ministry is issuing a directive that those stock that are kept by some farmers and buffer stocks should be protected, and if possible, government should buy those stocks for onward distribution to the most affected communities in the country. And as I talk to you, prices of commodities have skyrocketed, and it's difficult even to come buy some of these crops because the small season in Ghana has been affected. Therefore, the yields are low because of the prolonged drought. So in all, things are not very, very rosy, and the picture looks gloomy But I believe with the directives and the effort being put in place by the Ministry of Agriculture in Ghana, some short-term solutions are going to be found to risk. And we pray that the next season will be so clement to us so that the yield will be high and we'll be able to get some good harvest in order to survive this food insecurity, which is plaguing the entire country now.
Right. I mean, some of the measures that you talked about from the Ministry of Agriculture is definitely, as you say, short term, right? But we're talking about climate change induced drought. So as a climate expert, is there something more that authorities can do to ensure that somehow the situation will be reversed and then subsequent years coming will not, you know, provide the same sort of shortcomings?
Yeah, thank you very much, Eddie. You know, the climate effect, to fight the climate effect demands collective actions. So as a country, what I suggest, what I could see is that we should start looking at irrigational agriculture, using the water bodies we have. Ghana is a very well-watered country. We have big rivers and as well as small streams. So the country should now come with a comprehensive agricultural mechanization framework or policy that will look at how to irrigate most of the cropping areas, most of the farming areas, especially by the building of small community dams that can stock water and be used for agricultural purposes. Some of the big rivers we have in this country, like the White Volta, the Red Volta, the Oti River, and the Black Volta, and the main Volta itself are freshwater bodies. So government should look at how to, you know, canal some of this freshwater onto agricultural farms. And this is how we could adapt to the effect of climate change so far as agriculture is concerned. If you want to still go by waiting for the weather, the rain-fed agriculture, I believe we will not be doing ourselves any good, and the repercussion going into the future will not be so good for us. So I believe government should come out with an irrigation plan, a mechanization plan, in order to use the water bodies we have for irrigational agriculture rather than waiting for the normal natural rain to do agriculture.
Right. So is that difficult to do? Is that super expensive to do? And why hasn't the government done this when we've been talking about climate change for so long that you have to look beyond and see how best to cushion the effects of climate change?
Truly speaking, Eddie, this is not difficult, much difficult to do. The current government has come out with programs that have been, known as one village, one dam. That is all agricultural villages that have some rivers or water bodies could be dammed. So we have the policy of one village, one dam. We also have one of the biggest dam in the north there called the Pualugu Dam, for which government is working for some time now to make it what economically viable for the region. But this project have, you know, faced some challenges, and that is why we are experiencing this. So as a climate activist and climate watchdog, I believe strongly that government should have the will and the determination to do this once and for all, because it's no longer rocket science in modern times. So damming our rivers for water to irrigate farms, I think, is one of the basic things every government in Africa should be aiming at, because the issue of climate change, we could only adapt. As for mitigation, it's difficult to do by this looking at our economies. Therefore, irrigating our agri landscape now, I think, is the solution to the long term and probably the medium term so far as agriculture is concerned.
Right. The only confusing thing is how it sometimes takes so long to put such measures into action, and that is always the challenge, isn't it? Let me come to you, Miriam Kalita. How is the Malawi government responding to the ongoing crisis there?
There are a lot of other initiatives that the government of Malawi is doing, also in partnership with the SADC region and other humanitarian partners. For example, there are regional early warnings and climate monitoring initiatives going on, disaster response and humanitarian aid coordination. So government is a part of that. And also currently there's a national El Nino prolonged dry spells response appeal. The government is asking for aid from humanitarian partners just to boost the national food stocks. And they are providing funds to the Ministry of Agriculture to engage in mega farms so that farming should, even if when it's not raining, since I said before that Malawi depends on rain-fed agriculture. So now they are encouraging irrigation farming. And also there are issues of diversification. People maybe should be planting crops that are weather, they're not prone to bad weathers. So there's a lot that's going on. Also, Malawi is insured with the African risk capacity for drought, something like that. And they pay a premium to that. In case of drought, there's an insurance payout, apparently. And I hear the government just got $11 million US dollars from the insurance payout to also buy food. And currently, it's gone flat out to provide foodstuffs to those people that do not have anything to eat for that day.
Right, right. Yes, for the short term goes, hopefully, at least will cushion the current impact. But as we're talking about, yeah, we need more long-term goals. But you touched on it a bit. It's not just one country dealing with it. And you mentioned, yeah, SADC, right? Is SADC doing enough as the regional body in Southern Africa? Or is there more that they are being called on to do?
Well, governments and SADC have taken important steps to address the impacts of climate-induced droughts in Southern Africa. The measures are insufficient to fully mitigate the crisis. So they need to scale up the challenges to more substantial and sustained efforts, including increased investments, stronger implementation of policies, and enhanced regional cooperation, moving towards a more proactive and inclusive approach to ensure that the region can better withstand future droughts and build long-term resilience. I just read from the local papers today that Ukraine has given Malawi 19,200 metric tons to help over 5 million people that are really needy. Imagine, we are saying that Ukraine is a country at war. Malawi is a country at peace. But see now what is happening. A country at war is feeding a country at peace. The irony. So it's crazy.
Yeah. It's very, very interesting, because that's another aspect of the discussion that we're going to be digging into later with another expert. The fact that it doesn't seem in some situations that Africa has enough to feed itself, in especially when countries are experiencing such droughts, induced by the El Nino weather phenomenon. When you talk to people on the ground, Miriam, especially those being heavily impacted, what more do they expect to happen? And are they satisfied with how authorities are dealing with this at the moment?
They are not, unfortunately. They think the government is not doing enough, but also very quick to blame the government. I mean, we are talking about climate change. Climate change can happen anytime to anyone, anyway. So maybe the government is not prepared enough to, prepare for the shocks. But also people have got a role to ensure that they are prepared on their own and they get help on their own as much as they could. Because by the end of the day, government cannot manage also to provide foodstuffs to 20 million people. Look, government is actually asking for handouts from other countries. It means on its own, it doesn't have enough to provide for its own people. So it's really crazy, and people are not happy with how things are going. And by the end of the day, it is being politicized by the opposition political parties. And a lot of people have seen a lot of migration taking place. People are migrating to South Africa, a lot of them. Those that can afford, they are going to Europe, just running away from problems at home. And maybe they can find greener passages and send a little something back home so that people can buy food and live comfortably.
Clearly, a lot needs to be done because there's so many ripple effects of all of these. Thank you very much for that insight. Joel, I'm going to give you the final words here to wrap this up. What is the message for authorities out there? Explain finally to us how critical the situation we are in is and why it's so important that they act now.
I believe strongly that as the Minister of Finance has requested from Parliament of Ghana, especially the Finance Committee, about 8 regions have been affected: Northern, Upper East, Northwest, Savannah, Savannah West, Bono, Bono East, and Oti. So these are the 8 regions out of the 16 that are greatly affected. So the minister is requesting for 500 million Ghana cedis in order to come in and salvage the situation. That is to mop up stock from farmers for urgent importation of grains and for cash transfer to some of the people who have been greatly affected. So we can keep on doing this every year. I think the time has come for us to start building our strategic national food stock, like the advanced country like US and Ukraine, as the correspondent just mentioned. The country that have been at war for the past 2.5 years is now giving food to countries that have remained peaceful over 60-something years of independence. So I think there is a challenge for us to start looking at how to look at strategic food stock, strategic national food buffers in order to prevent some of these occurrences in the future.
Right, right. Maryam Kaliza, DW correspondent in Malawi. Joel Deg, climate expert in West Africa. Thank you guys for your insights. So what else is being done to cushion the impact caused by the drought in Southern Africa? Well, the UN World Food Programme, WFP, is aiming to provide 290,000 tons of corn from distant suppliers, including from Mexico and Ukraine. Sara Mbagobunu joins me now. She is the Director of International Fund for Agricultural Development, IFAD, for East and Southern Africa Division. Hello, Sara. Thanks for your time.
Well, Eddie, thank you very much for having me. Keen to be here.
Yeah, really, really glad to have you here. So my first question is really direct. Why is Southern Africa relying heavily on imported grain from Mexico and Ukraine? Really, is the whole African continent short of it?
That's a very good question. We do have pockets of production in excess, like in Ethiopia. But as you know, Southern Africa, the distance from Ethiopia, for instance, that has done very well in wheat production as a grain. The logistics around accessing pockets of surplus maize and grain production on the continent is compounded by one thing. Firstly, infrastructure deficits across the continent, which then drives up the prices and the time taken to actually shift food from places which are have food deficit to places where there is food surplus. So food surplus, food deficit. And so this makes it logistically more difficult, but also the transaction cost and the cost of moving the food is more expensive. So indeed, we have now had the capabilities of mapping where the food pockets are, but it's still cheaper to bring in grain and food from as far as Mexico and Ukraine. And if we do not challenge ourselves and invest in the logistical infrastructure, on the one hand, but also in water and reducing the dependency on rain-fed agriculture, on the second hand, and accessing the right type of technologies, along with the right mix of crops, we won't be able to overcome this challenge.
Right, because it is a big challenge. I mean, it's really bizarre to think that importing grain from places like Mexico and Ukraine is cheaper than sourcing it from within our own continent. So it's not a case of necessarily the African continent being short of grain. It's expensive to get the grain from some countries into, in this case, as we're talking about, Southern Africa. But this is not sustainable, is it, to constantly be importing grain from places like Mexico and Ukraine, is it?
I think you're absolutely right. We actually see now, even along with climate change, and I keep coming back to that, that in fact, the forecast of high temperatures in Mexico has already started affecting access to water. There's severe water shortages that are impacting not only drinking water in urban areas in Mexico, but also agricultural production. We have figures where we have seen that the drought in Mexico has actually reduced agricultural productivity and also damaged crops with these high temperatures, and it actually looks to worsen. So in fact, this is not a sustainable solution because Mexico is dealing with its own drought context. And if we look at Ukraine is in crisis. Actually, there is a very unfortunate war on Ukraine that needs to stop. But aside from that, because of the climate impacts, we see the drought in Europe also extending to the food basket areas of the Ukraine. So if Africa continues to look to Mexico and the Ukraine as an alternative source of grain, this is not sustainable.
Doesn't sound like that at all. Definitely not sustainable. And you hit the nail right on the head. Not just the drought affecting places like Ukraine and Mexico where grain is being sourced from, but also the conflicts going on in Ukraine is going to make it even more difficult to make this a sustainable solution. So tell us more about what can Africa do to be self-reliant amid the growing climate change effect?
Well, I mean, I think that's really where we have to focus and really look to see where we can crowd in our investments. I think really we need to, this is a very short-term model, meeting food import gaps. But in the short to medium term, we have to invest. And those investments include investment in water management, irrigation, small-scale irrigation, small dams, all types of irrigation solutions, precision water, precision farming, even digital farming. All those will unlock and make water use in agriculture more efficient. So really, that's one space that I think many governments have tried to prioritize.
Thank you very much for your time. Thanks for adding that. That's it from this edition of Africa Link. Join the conversation on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. Click follow so you don't miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Josie Mahachi. And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening. DW. Made for Minds.